Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So we hibernated whilst we were building Stick to Football, the main interviews, and we are resuming them again. And it's quite an exciting one. It's with the Liverpool... Do I call him right back? I don't think you can call him a right back because he's no ordinary right back. Trent Alexander-Arnold, obviously one of the most talented, defenders I think you'll see in the game. I can't make any higher compliment for him than saying this is David Beckham, Kevin De Bruyne playing at fullback. Am I here? You don't see fullbacks playing football like you see him ever.
I walked out at Old Trafford and it was the biggest, I couldn't believe it. I genuinely couldn't. Obviously, when we're coming out, there's boos and that, and I'm like, I've never experienced that because I haven't been booed before. But I was like, it's never end. It's just like that.
When we go to Anfield, it's exactly the opposite. There's no space there. There's no room there. Mm. You literally would take a touch and you just have to deliver it down the line or else you're just getting absolutely smashed. Do you not? You don't have the same problem as me, do you?
No, but you know what I hate about United? When you come off the pitch and it slumps down.
Oh, okay.
That's dangerous.
Little nudge down.
Yeah,
there.
The nudges.
I always think when you're speaking to a current player, it's always a little bit more reserved, rightly so, because they're a current player who have obligations to the club. You know, I'm not looking for any glorified headline out of Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't want one and he won't look to give me one. What I'm looking to talk to him about is the position, his challenges on and off the pitch, being at a big club, the demands of being an academy player at a big club. I'm looking forward to it, really looking forward to it.
Do you play darts a lot?
No.
So this dartboard has been just put up for us?
Has Jurgen Klopp got that sort of fear factor? Yeah, he has it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's been times when I've needed a bollockhood and there's times when, like, I've not needed it, and I've kind of needed a little bit of love and guidance, and he's been there for me. He wants us to be the hardest team to beat, that every team fears, thinking to beat this team, we have to do something very special.
You're going to be sat on the edge of your own box, low block,
really.
Playing like me.
Talk to me about Jurgen Klopp and the influence as a sort of mentor, coach, boss that he's had on you.
Incredible, really. I think I owe everything to him, really, from as a player. I was thinking about this recently, the only thing you can ever ask for as a young player is opportunity. Yeah. What you can do is just hope that when you get to 18, 19, you've got a manager that's willing to give you a chance, and I was fortunate enough to have that. And not only that, he put his arm around me and guided me through it, through the ups and downs, the winning of stuff, losing things, good games, bad games. Cause your first bad game is, you think you're never going to kick a ball again. You know, you think I'm done.
Does he shout at you, at the players? Does he shout at you when you're a young player? Has he had have had a bollocking at half-time?
Mm.
Yeah.
The good thing is he knows when a bollocking's needed and when a little bit of love's needed.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important to be able to see who needs it and when they need it. But yeah, there's been times when I've needed a bollocking and there's times when, like, I've not needed it and I've kind of needed a little bit of love and guidance, and he's been there for me. And he's someone that I can go into his office and even if it's not football related, go and speak to him and vent and get off my chest. He's always there, always encourages the lads to go into his office and speak and give them answers and be honest about decisions, really. So that's all you want as well.
Yeah.
If you're going to go and ask questions, you need a gaffer who's going to be honest.
Yeah. I had a manager that was massive respect for, like, huge mentor, but you could go and knock on his door, but you would do that as a last resort, because you just, you know, there was still that element of almost like your dad when you're younger, a bit of fear factor.
Yeah, yeah.
Has Jurgen Klopp got that sort of fear factor? Yeah, he has it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like a fear as in like you're scared to be around him. It's just like
presence.
And, yeah, he's got that presence and that like aura about him that is one of, if not the best manager on the planet, and he's showing that. So when you're a young player or even coming first into the team, you're kind of on your toes around him, thinking, how's he reacting, this, that, and the other, how can I get in his good books and that. And I'm just, I owe everything to him, really, to be honest.
What was it like that morning when he came in and said, I want to sit down with you all?
Weird, because we never have a meeting at that time, never. So
what time was the meeting?
We normally get in for like 10, half 10, and then we'll have a meeting at like 12 just before we go to train.
Yeah.
And then when we get in, we have a meeting at half 10. It's the first time I've ever had a meeting at half 10. He's like, everyone in the changes. So everyone's in there, and then he's just up there, and then like you can just see the lads all looking around, like, what's going on? And then he just said, look, I just wanted to let you know. It's breaking now. So it broke at the same time. Just kind of done. Like, not done, but I can tell it. This is it, really.
Yeah.
He kind of knew that. I think another season would be too much, but he has enough in the tank to get us to the end of the season. And that's something he always taught us, and that's something that I've adopted as a player now, is you take it season by season. No matter what goes on, no matter what situation you're in or whatever, no point stressing about the next season, because that's completely different. You focus on the season, you put everything into it, and then the next season you go and try and do it again. But up until then, you squeeze every last drop out of it, and that's again probably something that there's so many lessons he's taught me, but that's probably one of the biggest ones, is he doesn't want us, he'll say to us, he doesn't want us to be the best team in the world, doesn't want us to play the best football in the world, he wants us to be the hardest team to beat, that every team fears, thinking to beat this team we have to do something very special, and not even like a footballing sense, but how much we want to win. Is something, the mentality he's instilled in us. Even now, the young players that come through, you can see it within 2-3 sessions of just being around them. And we're used to it because we get the same message. I've had the same messages kind of every day for 7 years now, so I'm kind of immune to it. And it's just built in that I have that mentality, and I do things that way. And seeing new players coming in and young players coming through, you can see within 2-3 days how. Like the intensity levels, the aggression levels, the desire, just
the impact
on them straight away. Like the intensity in them is just like running around like dogs, just trying to win the ball off anyone, not scared of anyone, tackling whoever they want and putting the foot in and that.
You've probably not even had time to think about sort of like what next season looks like, because you've got so much to think about this season. But does it scare you a little bit, the idea of a new voice, one that you've not heard before?
I'd probably say I'm like, I sat on the fence on it, because I think it'll be a completely different situation.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's going to be weird to turn up to pre-season or whatever and have to adopt new playing style.
Yeah.
Whereas, without anything getting said to me, I know how the manager wants me to play.
Yeah.
And I turn up first day of pre-season, I know. Yeah. I'm to jump there, I'm to press, I'm to do this. Now it's like, my next pre-season is going to be a completely different message. And
you're going to be sat on the edge of your own box, low block. Playing like me.
Low block, don't go past the halfway line. it's going to be strange, but I think I like the idea of, it'll be a new challenge for the team, for the club. For the players.
Do you think it's partly on you to make this transition work as much as it is for a new manager? Because it's going to be tough for a new manager to come in and replace that giant of a figure that's been there, isn't it?
I think the way I look at it is, of course the manager's going to come in and change the way we play, and it'll be a different kind of culture and different messages, but as players, that the mentality to win and the eagerness to win, and not the pressure, but kind of yeah, the internal pressure within on ourselves and the demand to win things and to be in a title race next season, no matter who the manager is. That's what we expect from ourselves. Of course, results might not go our way, whatever, but as long as that mentality is there, not that it doesn't matter who the manager is, but as long as the dressing room is got that desire that we're going to win, we're trying to win things, it's not a transition season, the manager comes in and within his style of play is that winning mentality, then that's how the transition needs to happen.
You're in a three-horse title race with City and Arsenal. I'm not going to ask you about the other two teams because they'll do what they'll do, but what gives you confidence that Liverpool can be the title winner at the end of the season? Just because you've been on this journey before.
I think experience is a massive part to it. And I think obviously the other two teams will have experience from last season with their own title race within themselves.
Does the manager leaving and the passion and the emotion around Liverpool and what it's going to be like, does that give you that edge, do you think?
I think he will feed into that the further it goes. Like, let's say we get into May, the start of May, and it's still that tight, then he'll start to feed into how it could look, how it could feel. Up until then, it's like, we just need to try and stay.
Yeah.
He never says, we're trying to win the league, we're going to win the league.
No, he doesn't speak about it.
It's more, we're going to get the most out of ourselves, we're going to squeeze every drop of potential. There will be twists and turns no matter what. I'm sure all three teams will try and win and we'll come close to kind of winning every single game they play now. There will be twists and turns and we just hope that we're in the best position.
No, I mean, you winning the Champions League was the best moment. Is there a competition between you both?
There was. We haven't done it in years now.
I've just recognised, I think I'd be brilliant for Jurgen Klopp because I could definitely go into midfield and give it away for him. This little game. So you're going to throw a dart at the board. If it's an odd number, you get a football question. If it's an even number, you get a non-football question.
Okay.
If you didn't make it as a football player, what would you have been?
I'm very interested in like the mental side of things, so I would say like sports psychology.
Good. Away we go, one more. You've got ALS. 13. You want your football questions, don't you? The best moment you've ever had in your career? It's a simple one.
Winning Champions League.
Wasn't my best moment.
No, what was yours?
No, I mean, you winning the Champions League wasn't the best moment. Well, next one. Biggest phobia? What are you scared of?
Cats, maybe.
Cats?
Yeah.
You got pets?
I have a dog. I have a dog, but cats are just a different kind of...
We'll move on, we'll not offend the cat lovers.
Yeah.
17, odd. Best friend in football?
I would say club. Robbo. Internationals, probably Jude.
He's been unbelievable, Andy Robson, eh?
Oh
my God. Is there a competition between you both on assists and...
There was. We haven't done it in years now, but there was for about 2 or 3 years. Still unbeaten in it. But I always say it's about the quality of the assist as well. He can pass to someone here, you'll turn, whip one top in, or take on four players, score, and he'll claim the assist. It's honestly. Whereas I'll play a 60-yard pass, get the assist, and it'll be like, yeah, that's a proper assist. He'll play a little short pass.
So the quality of your assist is a lot better.
Yeah, it's all quality, not quantity.
Right, next one. 12. Three dream guests to have round for dinner.
Say Stevie G, Zidane, and probably Ronaldo, I would say.
Cristiano.
Yeah, loves to pick his brains. As you can tell, I just like talking. I love football. Can't stop.
Next start, we're on again. 2. If you could time travel, which football era do you want to play in?
Late 2000s, I would say. I love that era. Like Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez, you had Lampard, Drogba, you had like Fabregas with Van Persie, you had Gerard Torres.
Yeah.
Like each team had their super, that was just incredible. And then I love like probably the 9-11 Barca team. I would have loved to have felt.
We didn't love it.
No, you guys.
They were beating us up.
Yeah, but I think like that era was that's the one that I grew up watching.
Yeah.
And like that, I was like 10 to 15 at that time, and I was like, that's what really dragged me into football, man.
Yeah.
What would yours be?
I always think now, in some ways, I'm traveling, I travel forward. Because every team, when I watch the fullbacks, it started to mesmerise me and think, how would I have even survived? No, I say this, how would I have even survived today? Not just watching you, forget you, you're a freak with the way you pass the ball, but like watching Porro at Spurs go into midfield and doing what he does and a doggy, and watch, you see obviously what, you know, Stones is doing at the moment, City playing in midfield, and Kyle's having to tuck in but then get back out again. My job was really simple. If my left back went forward, I'm tucking round.
Yeah.
If I go forward, he's tucking round. If it's on my side, I'm going out there and getting to it. Just, quite simple. The ball comes into me, I've got a pass there to my right winger, I've got a pass into my striker, I've got a pass to my central midfield player, and I've got a pass to my centre back. And that's what I'm doing. I'm serving 15 yards. I might hit a ball into my striker. That's my game. My game's quite sort of methodical. And what you're being asked to do now on the ball and the positions you've been asked to take up, it's like degrees of difficulty are like here compared to the degrees of difficulty of how I was asked to play the game. So I would think, I'd love to just be here now.
Yeah, just to see what it is.
You'd like to see me here now. I was also seeing you.
Yeah. I think everyone would like to see you.
So you go, you won't be gobbing off anymore.
Every right back wishes you were playing right now.
Because if I look at you, I think, I can't even relate to it, the game, what you've been asked to do. How do you know when to be in there? When you're going forward as a team, you're sometimes coming into that right central midfield. Do you make that decision when to be there or when to be out wide to be able to, how is that? Is that just a feeling or an instinct, or is it something that's like a design?
Both, really. So I think the outline of it is, like, we work on it, like the shell.
Yeah.
It's then within that, you have freedom. So it's like, okay, so we're always going to have four in the middle of the pitch at any given time.
So you always have to four in there.
Whether it's the midfield three and the nine comes in and makes that four, or a fullback comes in and makes that four, we're always going to have that. And then it's identifying where and when that is.
Yeah.
Maybe when the centre mids will drop back into the back three, into the back line. That means people have got to get in there.
And then
does that. It doesn't matter who it is.
So it's actually what's in midfield.
It's just like seeing it and then going, okay, well, he's gone there, so I need to go there.
And it's not relating to, say, Mo's position.
Well, Mo comes into it at a point where if it's switching out, we need someone that's always wide.
Yeah.
So sometimes I might be wide, Mo will be inside.
So
like
Mo's
a second
inside,
striker.
You might go there.
Yeah, or it might be the right midfielder that goes out there. It might be Harvey or Dom who goes out there, and then I come in and do their job in there. It's just really flexible.
And the four that go in there, that's obviously to keep possession of the ball. Is that also to prevent counter-attack going back the other way?
Yeah, so it's kind of like our whole game is based on counter-press.
Yeah.
So the way that we get told to play is, it's good up there to risk the ball. Because at times, not that we're told to lose it, but it's not a bad thing to lose it because they then open their shape up.
Yeah.
They start to think, let's counter-attack. We win it back quick, and then that's when we kill them. So it might not always be like the Man City way where the tiki-taka and they break you down. Yeah. That's not. No one can really do it like them.
Yeah.
Ours is more, we'll try. I'll probably risk it, might lose it, but they'll then expand trying to get at us. Our six wins it back, and then we're our 5v5 at the back, and then we're gone.
I've just recognised, I think I'd be brilliant for Jurgen Klopp because I could definitely go into midfield and give it away for him. I could definitely go into midfield, give it away, and then you're all counter-pressing. It'd be amazing, that.
The messaging is, at first, you would find it very strange because the messaging is, he doesn't care who goes.
Yeah.
Doesn't care. I can go and press the centre. Like, if we lose it...
You just jump, basically.
You go.
Yeah, yeah.
It does not matter. That's the way we play. You don't think about your position at that point. It's the people behind you that...
They've got to adjust. Yeah.
And it's like probably the two sixes that, okay, well, he's gone there. He's got, like, so say I've gone, so Trent's gone, so it's either Endo or Ibu or Kwanzaa, whoever's kind of on that right side, to then fill in if my winger's cheating a little bit.
I've seen you with your winger, and you've jumped past your winger, and I'm watching thinking, where the fuck is he going? he's jumped.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, has he been told to jump there? Yeah. Or has he just basically sort of felt that there's a jump on? And it'll get played over you the odd time. And you know, we were never told to jump. If you've got a winger here...
That's your man.
And there's a man in there, that is the least sort of danger. The idea of jumping there, and let's say he flicks it on past you or he just nips it around the corner, no, I would never come out of my hole. It's just a completely different way of thinking. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I recognise that in the last couple of years, that you obviously have been told to jump past your wing. I mean, it's obvious sometimes, and then obviously Canate will come across or Matip will come across.
So our messaging is, you play against the ball, not the man.
Yeah.
So wherever the ball is, so let's say a goal kick or their centre-back's got the ball, I should be in between the winger and the full-back.
Yeah.
And the centre-back should be in between the striker and the winger. Yeah. So if it goes over me, I can get back in.
Yeah, yeah.
If it goes there, I'm gone and everyone's around. Yeah, like the back four should be on like a rope.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes... Like you said, when your fullback, the other fullback went forward, you're back into it. It's that, but just probably a bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
But you'd struggle at first with the first probably 2-3 months of it is, or pre-season especially is, you've never seen anything like it.
Is he just like a sort of animal like all around the pitch?
It's
telling you
just it's just like you can't stop running. It's not like in a bad.
No.
Bad like punishment kind of way. It's not that. It's like this is the way you play, and we're gonna beat them because they're gonna get tired and we're not.
And your line is like that high. It's like, I mean, it makes me like sort of wince a little bit. I'm thinking, what, the spacing behind is unbelievable, but to be fair, your goalkeeper does a good job.
But like the messaging is, our backline has to be high because we need to make the pitch small because we're pressing them as much as we can. If we stay back, then the gaps are big. Flip it. We can't be high if you're not pressing.
Yeah, yeah.
So if centre back's got the ball and got time, we're high. Then that's just a stupid line.
Yeah.
If we're high, but he's got pressure and he doesn't know where to go, we need to be there. Like, So it's
right. Next one.
I don't even know what the question was.
It's a good question though. Good answer.
What question that was?
We're just talking about fullbacking, right back. It's just it's brilliant. This. Was that your low point then last year? Would you say in your career?
I've learnt a lot from it, which is good, and I think that's helped me this season especially.
What you're doing is the hard bit.
And there's so much more I can go and achieve.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I used to play when I was younger. I don't play much anymore.
From what I see is when Rooney came in, he was like, it looked like he was a man, he was everything. And then Ronaldo's come in and he was probably a little bit more frustrating, a little bit more needed to learn and wasn't the finished article. At what point did like them scales then change and Ronaldo was the real deal and the best player in the world?
I think you're right. Rooney was almost like a man straight away from 2000, what would it have been, 2004 when he broke it, 2002-3-4 when he broke in. And when he broke into the England team at sort of like 18, he was like the best player in the team straight away. He was unbelievable. His decision making, his power, his strength. Ronaldo came and he was like that, quite scrawny, not developed his body. His decision making was erratic. He would, you know, if he should have crossed it, he dribbled. If he should have dribbled, he crossed it. He always, to be fair, frustrated the players in the middle because he'd go to cross it and they'd make the run and then he'd turn back. You know, and you get down that line, you just put it in. He would never. He was all over the place like that. And I actually lost faith with him because not just that, he wasn't delivering in an attacking sense, but he didn't run back that much. So he wasn't really helping, whereas Bex, when I played there before, was always running back and doubling up. So I always had help.
Yeah.
So it was quite frustrating. And then I think it was around 2006 he scored. That's when they knocked us out of the World Cup in Germany. And he scored the penalty. And he came back. And all of a sudden, his physique, his body had changed. And that season, 2006, when we first won the league, and we haven't won the league for 3 years because of Mourinho and Wenger. And he was that season, just a transformation into this absolute machine, strong. I think he scored 35, 40 goals. Wazza kept at that level. When they were both at that level, probably 2006 to 2009 when he left, that was the best United team I've ever seen. Because you had Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez up front, and you had obviously Giggs, Scholes, Carrick. It was unbelievable. And the movement, the speed, the power was frightening. But then sort of Cristiano went to Madrid, carried on going that way, and Wazza started to sort of... Wazza's career at 27, he played for like 10, 11 years already.
Yeah.
So they both sort of like, you know, Wayne was always going to have a shorter career, but when they were both together 2006-09, they were brilliant. And then after that, Cristiano started to go like that.
Could you tell that was going to happen?
The body shapes were different. I say that respectfully in terms of sort of Wazza's that sort of square, sort of strong shape. Whereas Cristiano had this like physique, like a super middleweight boxer. And he was in the gym every day for an hour before doing his pre-activation, even back then when it was like it wasn't really the thing as much, and he'd stay after and do all the sort of the ice baths, he had all the stuff in his house. Robotics too strong, but he never took a chance with his professionalism at all. Which, to be fair, Wazza, you know, if you ask him, he did.
Yeah.
You know, he liked to drink, he liked to go out a little bit, and his body shape was different, but they were both unbelievable players. But Cristiano just went on, and he's still going now. You've seen his body, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
but your body shape's similar to Cristiano's, I would say, in the sense of when he first came in. And you've also get stronger, he's got stronger. People now see you as a midfield player, just the way you play and where you're ending up with Liverpool. Do you see yourself as a midfield player, or do you still see yourself, no, I'm a right back?
I still see myself as a right back. I see myself who can probably play in both positions if needed. But I think my focus is, until I'm told otherwise, by the gaffer, then I'm still a right back. I come inside and I play inside when we got the ball, but no, essentially when you're writing the team sheet, I'm a right back.
You're by far, I'd put you in the same category as Kevin De Bruyne and David Beckham in terms of use of the ball. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know how you do it.
Thank you.
I have no idea how you deliver the ball, how you do from deep, from high up the pitch, when you're in midfield, the passes you play. And then I've always asked that little bit more from you defensively. You know that, and I've said that to you, and I've spoken to you. Something's changed, it's felt like, in the last 6 months. Is there something changed in your mind about... Because to me, the right back, defending right is the easiest bit. What you're doing is the hard bit.
Everyone always says that to me, you know. It's harder. The stuff that I'm good at and the stuff that I excel at, like the passing, the vision, everything like that... That's the hard part. That's the things that people can't pick up. It's that you can't learn. It's just instinctive. But I think definitely over the last... I think, like I said, in the summer, I had a... Because of... I think last season was a season I thought to myself, I'm not going through that again. And I feel like I should be able to control whether I have a good season, I'm happy with our play. But regardless of what people say...
Yeah.
You know, people might say I have a bad game. There's times I'll come home and I'll think, you know what? I felt like I'd done my job, I'd done what I was asked. Yeah. Okay, I maybe never got assists or whatever, but solid defensively, done this, that and the other, but people won't talk about that. But so I thought, as long as I can say in myself that the season's gone well, and I just thought, I don't want to waste another season.
Were you suffering last season? What do you think? What was in your mind last season?
I think it was just, I think as a player, as a team, as a whole, we kind of went through a rough season. And when people have such high expectations of you individually and as a team, it's hard to then keep living up to them, and it's the hardest demand ever. Which is why I have so much respect for you and your team in that era, and how to continuously keep winning and finding it. And It's the hardest, I've found that it's the hardest thing to do in football is to be consistent.
We had bad seasons as well, though. You know, we had seasons where we dropped to, like, you know, well below our standard. You just don't remember them sometimes at the end.
Yeah. But I just felt at the end of the season, I just thought, I've learnt a lot from it, which is good, and I think that's helped me this season especially. But I just thought I'm not going through that again last season. I didn't want to feel the way I felt at times, and likewise as a team, I want to be. I've said it before. I want to be winning minimum one trophy a season.
What you like when you come home when it's not going well, when you feel like, how do you carry football home with you? Are you able to switch off, or are you somebody that when you have a game or a difficult moment, you carry it with you and you're like, you know, a little bit down?
Both, I would say. A little bit of both, yeah. I think I respect the way I feel and I embrace it for however long it needs to take. Yeah. The more of a runt that you're in, the longer them... You know, you're in good form, you have one bad game, you don't even really think about it. It's like, oh, it's a bad game, let me get back to it. You know, 4, 5, 6 games where you haven't really had a good game.
Yeah.
It lasts a lot longer. But I'm someone who just, I try as best as I can to just keep a flat baseline.
Yeah.
And whether good, bad, in between, is don't get ahead of yourself. And, you know, I've always believed in keeping level headed, you know, my family and my friends around me as well will keep me feet on the floor.
Was that your low point then last year, would you say, in your career?
I would say so, yeah. I would say so. Because I think from the start, it was kind of up. From the start, getting into the team, then all of a sudden the next season I'm Champions League final, going to a World Cup in my first full proper season as a first team player. And then the next season, winning the Champions League. Then the next season, winning the... And it was just, every season was
constant
just...
Up, yeah.
And it was... I always thought that there would come that point. And a bit like you feel it in the academies and whatever. And even, you know, like I said, so many good games will go like that. And then this, that and the other. So I was expecting it to come at some point. I think it came at the right time. I think if it came too early in my career, it dents your confidence, and you start to question yourself. Whereas, you know, that wasn't the point. I understood what I'd achieved so far, and I'm so proud of myself and how much work I put in. But also understanding how much I'm not even halfway through my career, and there's so much more I can go and achieve. And figuring that out, figuring out what it is that I want to go and do and want to achieve, and challenge myself, push myself to the limits, and have that demand on yourself to have to perform week in, week out.
What did you do in the summer that made you feel like, right, okay, I'm not going to do it again? But what did you do that means that you feel now? Obviously, this season I've noticed a big, you know, your mentality at the start of the season, your performance levels have always been high. But this season I just felt there was the determination in you that was sort of like, oh, this is a different level. This, mm-hmm. you know, to the point where by up until your injury, you're probably talking about being one player of the season in the mm-hmm. whole league, let alone just as a defender.
I think... I felt like a big sense of responsibility on myself. Up until now, I kind of just gone with the flow, kind of just, everything been going upwards and upwards and upwards, and naturally, it just keeps getting better, and you don't have to think about things too much. You're just enjoying your footy, not thinking about it, and everything just keeps happening. And then
just going with the flow almost a little bit.
Yeah, and then it gets to a point when that flow kind of starts bringing you down. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, I need to take responsibility to make sure this doesn't keep going down and it halts there. And to be fair, the back end of last season, I really got a big, a good run of games, good run of form. I had the summer with England, which kind of revitalised me as well, gave me that fresh new hope of finding a place in the England team. And some really good chats with the manager. And then, so I just felt a lot of responsibility. Like, it's on you, it's my career.
Yeah.
You can't just kind of let it just pass you by, and if it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. It's like you need to try and get a grip of it and get the power of whether it is good or whether it is bad and force it in that direction. So, and then just having a demand on myself. I think the responsibility of now being club vice captain really come into it as well. Start getting put into that role means you need to step up. You need to perform. People are looking up to you. You need to be a role model. You need to be someone in the changing room, in and around it, that's driving standards. And I just felt responsible for that, and I like it. I love the responsibility and crave it, really.
Did you speak to anybody else that helped you? I mean, obviously your manager maybe or coaches, but was there anybody, did you see a psychologist or did you see anybody that you sort of like, you know, go and confide in or just do it all mainly yourself and through your coaching staff?
A lot of it was just, through with the manager, with the coaching staff, with my family. They helped me through it as well. No, it wasn't like I was in a really dark place. It wasn't
just performance level.
It's just like you're just not happy with how you're playing, and when that's the biggest thing in your life, it does get on top of you.
And you're a local lad, and you feel it. And you feel it more when you're local. Mm. I mean, obviously the players that come to the club, big club like Liverpool, they feel it as well. But when you're local, you feel it more, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Because it's like you're engulfed in it. It feels like you're in the centre and everything's like surrounding you, and it's not that it gets on top of you, but it's an intense thing, and it's something that you know, I'm sure you felt the same. You love it because it makes it feel even more special when things are going well. But you also got the sense of you're letting everyone down when you're not performing, which is difficult. But I think it's good for players. It's not good for players to go through it, but it's important because, like you said, once you come out of it, like I feel now, whatever I go through now, between now and the end of my career, I'll be able to handle it. Whether good or bad, I'll have the right mentality towards it. I still remember to the day the first time I seen my name on the back of someone's shirt. My group that I came through with, no one really made it. It was kind of just me. You know what I've always wanted to ask you?
Oh, here we go. So talk to us about Liverpool in terms of sort of the city. Talk to us a little bit about your charity as well.
The city.
Intense?
Yeah. In a good way, in like a loving, wholesome, like...
Yeah.
You can see like just by people looking at you, changing like someone's life, really. It's incredible. I still remember to the day the first time I seen my name on the back of someone's shirt in the city centre. I was about 18. Just couldn't believe it. Could not believe it. And then now it's just above and beyond now. It's incredible.
And the charity work that you're doing?
Yeah, so charity is the After Academy. It's basically set up for kids who get released at 16, 17, 18, 19 onwards. From
Liverpool's academy?
No, just from...
Any academy?
Any academy. And it's there to kind of support them in what way, give them apprenticeships, give them, you know, placements where they can go and work experience for a year or so and get what they need to get and hopefully then, you know, find something else. Because I don't know what it was like for you, but when I was in the academy, the only thing was... You're either a footballer, and if that doesn't work, you're a coach.
Yeah.
You go and get your badges. They were the only kind of things, and I think now, like yourself and the media side of it, there's so many more opportunities to go and be a part of football that isn't just being a player or a coach, and there's so many different avenues that are out there that we're just not taught about in the academy.
It's interesting you say that, because it's obvious that like the players that sort of get released at 18, their dreams are just completely shattered. But when I was, probably after I was 23, 24, I became PFA union rep. So every year I had to go in with the young players to see the manager, which when he was releasing them as young pros or apprentices, and sit there and listen to the manager tell them that they wouldn't be there anymore. And obviously sometimes they get other clubs, wouldn't they? But imagine if they don't get another club.
It's the ones that don't really. It's like they don't really know where to go or what to do.
And what are you just thinking that for? Obviously... Do you just feel the privilege and honour of doing what you're doing, but you just... Is it someone that sort of you looked at that you thought, someone you played with or someone that you were young?
A lot, really, because my group that I came through with, no one really made it. It was kind of just me. And I was like, we all sacrificed so much and I sacrificed the exact same as 10, 15 other lads my age, let alone lads above and below me.
But they got rejected.
And like, mine's worth it. I sit back now and think, like... I'd do it all again because I'm reaping the reward from it. But them lads, they're not kind of getting the reward from it. And it's like, okay, well, I've wasted all them years.
Yeah.
And I've got nothing to show for it. Yeah, I was part of Liverpool Academy, but what's that going to do for me now? Yeah. Can't go and say, can I have a job because I was there? You know? Yeah. So it's kind of giving them a chance to make something of themselves.
Right, well, look, I've absolutely loved speaking to you today. It's been amazing. And have I missed anything out, by the way?
You know what I've always wanted to ask you?
Here we go.
No. This is what was it like when Phil left United?
Josh, it's interesting that everyone else was relieved. No, Josh, something. I always remember it was like when Bex left, Butty left, and Phil left. And it was bad each time because we had literally been together for 10 years. But I went round to the boss's house with Phil to see him on, I think it was a Sunday night.
You get into everyone's meetings like that?
If you want me to come and see Jurgen or Gareth with you, I'll sort it out for you. Don't worry, I can talk a good game. Get into everyone's meetings. It's a good way of putting it. No, I was asked to come along, and Phil was just like dreading this meeting with the manager. I just said, look, you know.
What was it? Was it?
I rang the boss up and said, look, can me and Phil.
Did he want to go or did the club?
He wanted to go. So Phil was in a role where, but I'm trying to think like it. He was playing 25, 30 games a season, but when the big, no matter how well he played, he felt, when the big game came along, he might miss out and like someone had come back in. And he felt like he wasn't going to be sort of like number, and he'd done that for like 7 or 8 years, he felt. And in the end, he just said, no, I want to be number one. I want to play. I want to play every single week. And David Moyes had come in for him. And he just said, and the manager said, no, I want you to stay. I want you to carry on doing what you're doing. And he just said to the boss, no, and I said, well, Phil said it. I just need to play every week, boss. I need to feel like I'm, on the team sheet. And I respected it, but I didn't like it. I wanted us to all stay together. Like when Nicky left, he was on pre-season tour, and he felt exactly the same way. Newcastle came in for him, and he went home from pre-season tour, and it felt like someone had sort of like passed. You know what I mean? It was horrible. Like the Butty left our tour. We were in pre-season in America. And it's horrible. I mean, have you had that feeling when someone that you've... Jordan maybe left or...
Yeah, probably Hendo. Because that was a surprise. Obviously, come back from pre-season and it's just like... Yeah,
it's gone.
Starts getting into talks. And it's a bit different now because it's all over Twitter. It's all over...
Yeah, just kept quiet, is it?
Yeah, no. It's like, a move's kind of happening before it even starts.
No, it was tough. It's tough because you think you're going to be together forever. You've been together. I think we won six titles together, all of us, like up to a 25, 26. And then like them three left within 3 or 4 years. And then me, Giggsy and Scholes, he stayed. I stayed till I was 36. Scholes till he was 38 and Giggsy till he was 40. So they stayed for a couple of years after me. But yeah, it wasn't great when they left. What part of the game do you... love most?
Game day. I think the whole game day. It's like that these times now.
Yeah, you miss that bit.
It's just like...
But you know, that to me is the difference between you and me. I would... Not, panic's not the right word. I wouldn't panic about game day.
Just overthink it.
Yeah. And it was like... Because for me, as a right back, was I going to win my team the game?
Mm.
Nah, very rare.
You can only lose.
Scored seven
really.
Goals in six. I can only actually lose my team the game, you know what I mean? That's my mentality. So I played 600 games for United, thinking that actually most weeks, the likelihood is that I'm not going to win my team the game. No one's going to say Gary Neville was the best player on the pitch today if we win. But if I give a goal away, that was my mentality. I played my whole career like that. Whereas you play your career with the freedom of thinking, I'm going to influence this game in a positive way because of the way you play.
Yeah.
And that's a complete different... Rooney was like that. I remember game day, quarter-final, 2004, first tournament. And you're right thinking that he'd be a little bit... He went, I can't wait for tonight. And I'm like, fucking hell, I'm glad someone can. You know? I played against Ronaldo and Figo.
Wow.
Because they were swapping wings. They played for... Ronaldo and Figo played for Portugal and they were swapping wings. And I knew I was having one of them. Cristiano, to be fair, went against Ash at left back and I had Figo.
Do you find that difficult? Like if you come against a teammate on an international level?
Yeah, I played against Cristiano a couple of times where he came over to my side. It'd be tough. I don't think he enjoyed it either, though. I don't think he enjoyed it. He's rubbing his hands, really. No, but at the time, he was quite young and I was quite experienced and I wasn't fazed by him at that time because I played against him every day. I'll say this, the best players I played against were in training. Giggs, Ronaldo, Rooney. I was playing against him every day.
So I felt like when I first came in, I was against Sadio and Coutinho.
You're playing against Coutinho and Mane every day. You're playing against players better than that most weeks.
No.
How good was Mane, by the way? His runs, he would have caused me a massive problem.
Nah, same. He's the one player that I've always thought I'm thankful I never had to play against him.
He'd have caused me nightmare. He would have been my worst nightmare.
He was that run. He was a perfect attacker, you know.
Yeah.
He had everything.
Yeah, the movement was unbelievable with him.
As an athlete, that was.
Yeah.
Probably like in the end, similar to like Ronaldo, I would say. Yeah. Like, he had the jump. He could get up. He was fast. He could finishing probably wasn't the same, but he could finish both feet. He was just a threat at all times for everyone.
Right, we should do a podcast every week on the right backs.
I know,
we did. Brilliant,
you.
Amazing that. Thank you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.